Welcome to Food for Thought, the place to explore, celebrate, and manifest a life motivated and defined by unconditional compassion and optimal wellness. My name is Colleen Patrick-Gaudreau. I am your host. You can find me at ColleenPatrickGaudreau.com and on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And be sure to subscribe to Food for Thought at iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you're enjoying this free podcast called Food for Thought, I ask you to share it with others and leave ratings and reviews. Word of mouth is the best way to increase its listenership. And of course, supporting it is the best way to keep it going. So please go to patreon.com/ColleenPatrickGaudreau to leave a tip in the jar. And remember, supporters at $10 a month and above get written transcripts to every podcast episode, which is extremely helpful, especially in a case like today's episode where we're talking about a lot of specific resources. Today's topic is ethical tourism, avoiding animal cruelty while traveling. Well, hi, everyone. As many of you know, we just returned home from our trip to Thailand, this time not as a personal trip, but as one of the group trips that I've been hosting now for the last few years, this one being our third. Two to Italy we've had, and now this one to Thailand and an upcoming trip to Vietnam, which you are welcome to join us on. You can visit cpgtrips.com for more information. So along with my husband, David, and our fellow organizers, 20 awesome travelers joined us to trust us with their vacation time and vacation resources so that we could give them what we curated as an incredibly rich experience. And I'm really proud to say that that's what we accomplished in Thailand. It was so gratifying not only to have people tell us this was the best trip they've ever experienced, but also incredibly gratifying to see all the friendships that were forged and the fun that was had. I told the group that I felt like a proud mama watching everyone bond and laugh and cry and teach and learn and just enjoy a trip that's centered around joy and compassion and abundance. And that's pretty much my intention for all of these trips, including our next one to Northern Vietnam. And I can tell you for sure that it's already a fantastic group of people signed up for Vietnam. I know they're fantastic because they've either come to my compassion conferences or they're podcast listeners or supporters who I've had contact with over the years. And there are still just a couple spots left. I encourage you to join us for this journey to this incredibly beautiful country. You can go to cpgtrips.com to see the details about the Vietnam trip. And I want to emphasize that one of the things that makes these carefully curated trips unique is not only, of course, do we make sure that there's no animal exploitation on our trips, and you're going to hear about that on this episode, and of course that goes without saying, but we also work really closely with vendors and travel guides on the ground to make sure that no one's going to be asked to partake in or celebrate any animal exploitation. So our boat operators, for instance, don't wax poetic about how great the fishing is in the area, which, you know, other tours will hear about, or our on-the-ground guides for a walking tour don't point out how delicious the meat is at the local butcher shop. Everyone we hire and work with is sensitive to our compassion because we make sure of it. In addition, if you can imagine, the five-star hotels we're staying in aren't exactly vegan hotels, but we work really closely with them to provide the most amazing food for us. And same with the non-vegan restaurants. Everything is carefully curated on our part, and we're just thrilled and blown away by the enthusiasm and professionalism on the part of the vendors we work with to create the most wonderful meals for us, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and many snacks and surprises along the way. Another thing that makes my CPG trips unique is the focus on visiting sanctuaries where relevant, and organizations who are working to help the plight of animals in a myriad of situations in different countries. In today's episode, you'll hear about the plight of animals in Thailand and the work being done to help them, and how we all as travelers, as tourists, can make a huge difference in stopping animal cruelty, especially animal cruelty that's part of traveling and tourism. And in the case of Vietnam, I'm really excited that we're going to be visiting the sanctuary run by Animals Asia, a wonderful organization working to stop the bear bile trade. and rescuing bears who've only known life inside a cage with a catheter permanently embedded in their gallbladders that drain out their bile. Animals Asia rescues these bears and works with farmers to close down these farms for good and brings these bears to sanctuary. Now, bear bile farming is actually illegal in Vietnam. It's legal in China. But of course, there's a black market for it in Vietnam, hence the sanctuary in Vietnam, which is absolutely beautiful, and it's in a national park. And the sanctuary is not open to the public. So the only way you get to visit and see these bears who are rescued, they're so amazing, is through this trip with me. So go to cpgtrips.com for all of the details and enjoy what you see. And certainly you'll be hearing me talk about it another time on another podcast episode. I talk often about how becoming vegan is about awakening to the compassion that was inside of me all along, that it's about looking at the world through a new lens of awareness and compassion, that it's also about never forgetting that I once made decisions that hurt animals or contributed to hurting animals and made excuses and lived happily in the world of cognitive dissonance, where I knew very clearly I was eating animals, for instance, but just didn't make the connections between the meat or the eggs and dairy on my plate and the inherent violence in procuring such products. I knew very clearly an animal had to die for me to wear their skin or fur. I mean, I knew that intellectually, but I told myself what I needed to so I didn't have to change my behavior. And once my eyes were opened and the truth sank in, I saw these things through a completely different lens and made completely different choices. Well, I'm certain that this is the very same cognitive dissonance and lack of awareness and information that compels people to support other industries that exploit and hurt animals for our own entertainment or pleasure, both when we're at home, like going to the zoo or the circus or the rodeo, and when we travel, like swimming with dolphins, getting photographed with tigers, or riding elephants. And I think it's really interesting because I think it's our desire to be close to other animals and interact with them and touch them is really strong in so many of us, but that's exactly what causes them the most harm. I think most people are drawn to animals, and that's a good thing because it also means we want to help them and protect them and save them. But it's a bad thing when our desire to interact with them is at the cost of their own welfare and safety and happiness and at the cost of their own lives. Now, when we're talking about domesticated animals, obviously their lives are not threatened when we're interacting with them. And I'm not talking about zoos, which obviously cause harm to domesticated animals, you know, petting zoos. I'm not talking about, interacting with animals who are in confinement. But when we're talking about, like, you know, interacting with a dog or a cat or a horse or even farmed animals, cows and goats and chickens and turkeys and pigs at sanctuaries, there's no harm there at all. But again, in terms of us just having innocent interactions, I'm not talking about exploiting them. But when it comes to wild animals, there's absolutely no way to have a personal up-close experience with wild animals without causing them harm, period, full stop. So although today we're going to talk about the cruelty behind some specific animal spectacles and entertainment, the best general advice I could give you up front is that if a wild animal, whether an aquatic animal or a land animal, is involved in any way as part of a tourist attraction, you can be sure there's cruelty and exploitation involved. Wild animals pretty much want no interaction with humans at all. And if they're having it in any way, mediated, of course, by some kind of trainer or handler, I guarantee you 100% that cruel and nefarious things took place and continue to take place to make that animal submissive enough to interact with humans. 100%. So I could pretty much end this podcast right here with that and urge you to never pay for any kind of interaction with a wild animal or a performance by a wild animal. And that's it. So done. Thank you for listening, right? But I encourage you to continue listening because there's a lot more to say. And sadly, animal attractions for tourists is on the rise because the people running these operations are taking advantage of people's affection for animals and their desire to be close to them. And I think it's also on the rise because we're at a time when we feel like we have to photograph everything and have a selfie to demonstrate our experience wherever we've been. And so I think that's one of the reasons it's on the rise as well. But basically, these animal tour operators are exploiting not only the animals, but also the part of us, the part of humans that's so enamored with animals that we want to get close to them. But honestly, if we're truly enamored with animals, the best way we can demonstrate our affection for them is to leave them alone. Now, certainly every country has animal exploitation. I saw a disturbing comment on a couple of my Facebook posts while I was traveling about how, you know, they don't go to certain countries because of the animal cruelty there. No country has the market on animal cruelty. No country is innocent. And tourists are especially vulnerable because they want to have what is marketed as a rich and unique experience. When in Rome, we rationalize as tourists. But look, folks, Rome fell and the Colosseum closed, okay? So seriously, when we think, for instance, of visiting Spain, we think we should attend a bullfight, a bloody spectacle that begins in fear and ends in certain death. When we think of vacations revolving around the ocean, as in the Caribbean or in Mexico, we can hardly avoid advertisements to swim with the dolphins or in similar locales to swim with or feed stingrays or hold sea turtles to get your photo taken with them. When people think of visiting the US or New York City in particular, they think of hiring carriage horses to ride around Central Park or ride around crowded, noisy, car-filled city streets. When people think of traveling to the South in the US, they may think it's a great time to attend a rodeo, another cruel spectacle that's characterized by fear and terror for the animals who are roped and all sorts of really cruelty in that ring. All around the world, tourists are enticed by the opportunity to get their photo taken with wild animals, especially baby animals. Visitors to different parts of Southern Africa pay to walk with lion cubs. Again, a paid tourist attraction that's harmful for these lion cubs. Of course, zoos, aquariums, and circuses attract tourists in most major cities around the world. We even associate animal-based delicacies, food, with certain countries and think we need to partake in what we consider these cultural experiences. But you don't need to eat foie gras and frog's legs to enjoy France. You don't need to eat cat to enjoy China. You don't need to eat hamburgers to enjoy the United States or drink civet coffee or what's it called, Kopi Luwak in Indonesia or in the Philippines to enjoy these countries. Civet coffee, by the way, includes partly digested coffee cherries that are eaten and defecated by the Asian palm civet. All of these animals are wild caught and kept in intensive confinement in order to harvest their excrement. And no, I'm not kidding. This civet coffee, which is sold all around the world, is reducing the wild populations of these animals who do not exist for people to have a beverage made with their feces. And that's what's happening. And all of this is awful. All animal exploitation is awful. And yet, of course, it would be insulting to suggest that these countries and these cities are defined only by these specific types of cruelty. As travelers who are the main customers, especially of the tourist attractions for animal interactions, we can enjoy these countries without exploiting animals. And we have the power to shut these places down by not supporting them with our tourist dollars. That's how it works. And no country, as I said, is innocent. No country has a monopoly on animal cruelty. But it's a matter of being mindful and compassionate and wide-eyed and vigilant everywhere you go, including in Thailand. Now, remember, if an animal is involved, just avoid it. You may have to say no emphatically several times because it's really easy to get lured into getting your photo taken, for instance, with a baby animal or a cute gibbon or a monkey. So just make sure that's your general rule. Avoid paying for animal interactions unless, of course, these are true sanctuaries where animals are being helped. And we're going to get to that and how to tell what's a legitimate ethical sanctuary and what's not. But here are some particular things to avoid in Thailand that tend to target tourists in particular. We have something called tiger sanctuaries. Now, this word sanctuaries is deceptive because these are not sanctuaries in the true sense of the word. There are several places in Thailand where you can get your picture taken with fully grown tigers and baby tigers, and you can interact with them and touch them. If there is a sanctuary, quote unquote, that enables you to touch any wild animal, they're not there for the animals. They do not exist for the animals. They clearly exist for the tourists. Now, in Thailand, you have places called Tiger Kingdom. In Chiang Mai, you have Tiger Temple. In Bangkok, and there's also Tiger Temple in Phuket. But you'll see these in many places around Thailand. Now, Tiger Temple may sound familiar to you because it made international headlines in 2016 when a three-year investigation into this facility that was run by monks, and this investigation was conducted by Care for the Wild International, led to the confiscation of the tigers and the closing of the facility. The investigation found that the tigers were confined in pairs to barren cement cells for up to 20 hours a day. Their living quarters offered no enrichment. And of course, living in such an environment meant that the tigers were denied opportunities to just be tigers, to roam and to exercise. When they were allowed out, it was simply to make money for the temple, because a constant stream of tourists pay to pose for photos next to the chained tigers in the scorching sun. During these sessions, the animals are heavily sedated, their movements are restricted, and they're given no shade. Visitors reported that the monks mocked the tigers and beat them with sticks. During the raid, 137 tigers were rescued by Thailand's Department of National Parks, who finally responded to allegations by multiple NGOs. The tigers now, of course, they cannot be released into the wild. They were transferred to animal refuges within the country. And sadly, they also found that these animals were being bred and killed and dismembered to sell their body parts in the illegal trade of animal parts. Authorities uncovered the carcasses of 40 tiger cubs inside a freezer, and in another building discovered 20 cubs preserved in jars of formaldehyde. Although Tiger Temple closed because of this investigation and this raid, it's been reported that the Thai government gave the same people who were running this Tiger Temple a license to open another facility called Golden Tiger in the same province this year. This recording, it's 2017. And on their website, they're already urging tourists to reserve spots. Don't reserve a spot for these places, and urge everyone you know to avoid reserving spots at such places. I've described one place, but it represents all of them. Actual, reputable, ethical sanctuaries would never encourage visitors to have direct contact with wild animals. And if you see that, you can bet that these animals are chained up for several hours a day. They have their claws and teeth removed often, and some even clip the tendons in their wrists so they can't swat or run with speed. The bottom line is, never pay to get your photo taken with an adult tiger, with a tiger cub, on the street, or at a place called a sanctuary, especially if they're letting you interact with them. Now, another place that's a tourist attraction, animal related, they're called monkey schools. These are tourist attractions where people pay to come see monkeys perform. And you can bet your bottom dollar that there is not one monkey school that is ethical. Visiting a monkey school is not a unique wildlife experience. It's an animal exploitation. It's animal exploitation at its finest. What's more, a lot of these schools train monkeys to pick coconuts, which is something I want to address here on this episode. Something that's been asked, I've asked about it. People have asked me about it, especially as I was preparing this trip to Thailand. Now, according to various organizations, the monkeys used to pick coconuts are abducted from the wild. They're abducted from their mothers. They're chained up by their necks, causing these socially intelligent creatures serious psychological damage and, of course, physical damage. And they're forced to pick as many as 1,000 coconuts a day, many coming from these monkey schools. Many are kept as pets, where they remain chained up and then they're used to pick coconuts. According to the Daily Mail in the UK, when they're not working, their owners place a muzzle on their faces and shackle them to a tree stump or a shed, restricting their movement and interaction with other monkeys. This was an article that the Daily Mail had actually included in their newspaper, which was pretty extensive. And these are the kinds of stories we need to get out there more for tourists to understand what's happening at these places called monkey schools. In fact, we even saw a chained up monkey on our travels in Thailand at a private residents. It's unknown how many of the coconuts used to make products like coconut water are picked by monkeys. Over 18 million tons of coconut water come from Indonesia, and over 1 million come from Thailand, according to reports. So it's pretty easy to avoid going to these monkey schools when you're visiting Thailand. Just don't go. The question is, how can we be sure that the coconut products we buy did not involve monkeys? What about the coconut products we purchase in the US, in the UK, and in other Western countries around the world? Now, I know Animal Place, the organization here in California, has reached out to a number of companies who sell coconut milk beverages and coconut milk, you know, in the can, you know, to make certain curries, the coconut milk, true coconut milk, and then coconut milk beverages, and those who sell coconut milk beauty products. And pretty much everyone they reached out to that they were able to get a hold of said they don't source from companies that use monkeys to harvest coconuts. And you can see their list on their website of those who said they don't and those who hadn't responded. In the UK, eatplantsnotanimals.com also has a list of UK companies confirmed not to use monkeys for picking coconuts, and I include both of those on my website. I just wonder how the companies who say no, they're not sourcing from places that use monkeys to pick coconuts, how they really know for sure. Using monkeys to harvest coconuts seems pretty prevalent in Thailand and in Indonesia, so I just wonder how to know for sure. Of course, that's the question. The Bangkok Post claims that if coconut water is sourced from Thailand, the coconuts were most likely picked by monkeys. In the meantime, I have to say, I've altered my habits and have really cut down on the coconut products I buy and the coconut water I order at Thai restaurants, and I just stick with water. It's just one of those things where if I'm not sure and if I'm not certain, I just don't want to contribute. I mean, it's one of the problems, it's one of the boons and the bad things about the globalization today is that we have access to so many exotic fruits and vegetables we wouldn't normally have access to. And, you know, it's really hard. I know if I go to my farmer's market here that I'm supporting farmers that are just, you know, so many miles away that I can go visit myself. And I just really do prefer to support that because I can tell, I can talk to the farmers. I know that there aren't things being done, at least that I know about. Of course, there's a level of trust that we have to have when a company says, no, we're not sourcing from places that, you know, that exploit animals or people. You know, I know that a lot of the farms I buy produce from are using, you know, traps and such lethal methods to deter wild animals and from eating their crops. I mean, I know that, but it's still, at least for me, there's more certainty in supporting local products and local crops. So can I live without coconut water? I love coconut water. I think it's so fantastic. But if I'm not really sure, I have been opting to not get coconut water. And same thing with all these coconut products. Until I know for sure and I report back to you. And if you have any information, please share with me as well. But it is one of those things to consider as a product that could be unethical coming out of Thailand. Another place that's prevalent in Thailand is called crocodile farms. To be honest, it's hard for me to believe that people could go to a crocodile farm and not be aware that there's cruelty there, but it's another attraction in Thailand. The crocodiles are trapped in shallow waters. They're just forced to be in shallow waters. They're slapped with sticks. They're taunted by humans. And at the end of the spectacle, you can enjoy barbecue crocodile and purchase crocodile skin items. And of course, these you know, capturing crocodiles from the wild to supply these farms is an ongoing threat to their existence, of course. And it's pretty awful. So avoid crocodile farms, which I would imagine you would be doing already. Photos with non-human primates, I mentioned. One of the organizations we visited on our trip to Thailand was the Gibbon Rehabilitation Project, which rescues, rehabilitates, and when possible, reintroduces gibbons to the wild. The main reason this organization is in existence is because gibbons are being used and abused as photo props for tourists, as well as being kept as pets. And of course, they're also losing habitat. So most of these animals were taken from the wild as babies, which means mothers and many adults are killed who were trying to protect their baby. So every wild animal you pay to see or you pay to interact with in some kind of tourist trade, entire families were killed. The people making money from these exploitative ventures make it very easy for you to say yes to a photo with these beautiful animals, but don't do it. And tell everyone you know to never pay to have their photo taken with any wild animal. If you'd like to support the important work the Gibbon Project is doing, I really encourage you to visit gibbonproject.org, and you can adopt a gibbon, which also makes a wonderful gift for the holidays or for any time. Many of us at the end, we were late getting to our next destination because we were all lined up to adopt gibbons at the Gibbon Rehabilitation Center. So it was really lovely to see that everyone was like, nope, we're willing to be late to our next destination because we've got gibbons to adopt and support, which was awesome. Now, of course, you then have the main attraction for people visiting Thailand. You have elephant shows and elephant rides. Now, this hasn't always been the case, even though elephants have unfortunately been used for work and warfare over the centuries. These intelligent animals were also revered at one time. 100 years ago, just 100 years ago, there were an estimated 100,000 Asian elephants in Thailand alone. Today, their numbers have declined drastically. There are currently fewer than 3,000 elephants living in the forests of the entire country of Thailand, compared to 4,000 living in captivity. This is due to a multiple number of threats, ranging from the desire for ivory to the reduction of forest space and for their use in trekking and the illegal logging industries. The notion of extinction of the Asian elephant, especially in the wild, is no longer just a concern. It's the new reality. These are endangered animals because the population of the animals is being decimated, as is their forest homes. Just to give you perspective, according to the FAO, the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, the forest area in Thailand was reduced from 80% in 1957 to approximately less than 20% in 1992, largely because of deforestation associated with inappropriate developments. Although logging was banned in 1989, 70% of the forest area had already disappeared, and illegal logging continues. Sadly, deforestation is happening all around the world. And of course, personally, I believe, as animal advocates, if we want to save animals, we need to save their homes. The animals don't have anything if they don't have their habitat. They won't survive as wild species. There will only be a few left, either in captivity or on sanctuaries, or a very small number in the remaining wild spaces, never large enough to sustain a larger population. If we want to save animals, we need to save their habitat. Illegal poaching for elephant tusks and elephant calves is also a reality in Thailand. Males are hunted for tusks and females are killed for their calves. It's been said that to capture an elephant calf, three or more female elephants fostering the calf die, are killed, because they're trying to save the baby. Basically, elephant populations in the wild continue to decrease while the domesticated elephant population increases. And that's who we have now. That's who we see in the cities and the villages of Thailand. These are domesticated elephants. As I said, elephants were used in the logging industry until 1989. When, as the result of deforestation from logging, large floods overwhelmed the Thai population. The government canceled logging concessions and made commercial logging illegal. As a result, however, the thousands of elephants used for logging and the mahouts, the traditional term for the caretaker of an elephant who owned them, found themselves out of work. The mahouts had few options to support their families or feed their elephants, and so many fled to the cities to beg. Others turned to illegal logging or resorted to tourism. And now the tourism industry, is the newest contributor and the largest contributor to the demise of the wild Asian elephant. Elephant camps cater to tourists and force elephants to provide rides or perform gymnastic displays for entertainment. It may seem obvious as to why to say no to elephant rides, but I think a few details will be enough to convince you if it's not obvious enough. Plus, it's really helpful, I think, to have a few facts in your back pocket when talking to friends and family who may know nothing about these issues at all. First of all, As with all wild animals, in order to submit to the desire of humans, be forced to submit to the desire of humans, their will must first be broken. And I don't say that to be dramatic. That is literally what is done. Their spirits are broken through a training process, which is called the Pajan. This is a barbaric tradition of crushing an elephant's spirit. In a nutshell, baby elephants are separated from their mothers at a young age, which is a traumatic event in itself. You know, I mentioned before that baby elephants aren't weaned until they're upwards of 3 years old, and they stay with their moms many years after that. So it's traumatic to have a baby separated from his mother, a baby separated from his mother and his family. That's bad enough. They're very social. They have very strong family ties. But then the young elephant, this baby elephant, these babies are placed in a stall or in a cage, and they're tied with ropes that prevent him from having any movement at all. They're tortured, they're starved of food, they're yelled at and repeatedly beaten with bull hooks 24 hours a day, a process that continues for weeks. Once their soul is completely crushed and their body is beaten, the new mahout, the new owner, the new rider, comes in to release the elephant of his abusers. He, the new mahout, will be the one to lead the elephant away from the cage, resulting into this, you know, trust of the broken animal. That's how this works. You can see it for yourself. You can find footage of this breaking of the Pajan online, but you can also take it from me. This process is horrible. And without any exception, it's a traumatic, painful experience for these sensitive, intelligent, innocent individuals. Since the weapon, the bull hook, is used during the Pajan, mahouts carry the hook as a reminder to the elephant who's in charge and what the consequences would be if they don't submit at all times. You see this also in circuses and in zoos. The bull hook is carried around all the time because they know that's the weapon that hurt them when they were being broken. So zoos and circuses in the U.S., this is not just in Thailand. So even after the Pajan, many elephants continue to suffer, as most mahouts are using the bull hook on sensitive areas of the body in order to train and control them. And I want to reiterate, this is also done in the United States and in every developed country where elephants are being trained for the circus or zoo, bull hooks are used. Now, there are zoos, I should qualify, there are zoos that don't use the bull hook. The Oakland Zoo apparently is one of them that doesn't use the bull hook, but still, there are other issues with that. That's another conversation. The point is, for any kind of performance, circuses, for instance, bull hooks are used to break elephants. So be aware that for every form of unnatural entertainment, like carrying people on their backs or balancing or playing sports or painting, it's the effect of this cruel training method. Without that cruel training method, you wouldn't have an elephant do any of these unnatural acts, these acts that are anathema to their natural instincts. It's because of the torture they endured and because they are afraid it will continue that they do these things. Now, if that's not reason enough to avoid elephant rides and elephant shows, here's another. The body of the elephant is simply not designed to carry people. If you look at the back of an elephant, it rounds upwards, unlike, for comparison, the back of a horse. So that alone just makes the back already unsuitable for carrying a heavy elephant seat itself, let alone when it's loaded up with Taurus. And many elephants have their back broken because of it. Some camps will offer bareback rides to get around this issue, but it's still problematic. The tourists are heavy. The elephants still went through a torturous breaking process, and they're kept in chains when they're not used for riding. This is the case with all elephant parks. They lack veterinary care, and it's very expensive to feed these animals properly and nutritionally. Elephants require 200 kilograms of food a day, beyond what the average mahout can afford. Another tourist attraction related to elephants, which is all related to this, this is all the same breaking that takes place, is buying paintings painted by elephants. Don't buy elephant paintings. There's nothing humane about this. It's all done under duress, pain, and threat of torture. The mahout will be holding the elephant's ear while the elephant is forced to put paintbrush to canvas, making it look like he's voluntarily painting. But what's really happening is that his handler has a very sharp weapon, like a nail, hidden in his hand. So while he's he's holding the elephant's ear. He's actually digging the nail into the elephant's skin, especially behind the ear is a really sensitive place, even if it wasn't sensitive. It's terrible anywhere on the body, but this is an especially sensitive part of the elephant's body, of any of our bodies. Tourists don't really notice this. They think it's all done in a way that's not harmful to the elephant, but it's all part of the same system of exploitation and pain and abuse. So here is a quick overview of what you can do or not do when you travel to Thailand or when you hear of someone you know who's going. Do not go to or pay for any kind of elephant performance, period. Do not pay to get your photo taken with an elephant, baby or adult. Do not pay to ride an elephant. Do not buy elephant paintings. You're not supporting any elephant organization. There's nothing good about these elephant paintings. Do not buy any kind of animal related trinket. This might seem obvious, but don't buy elephant tusks or ivory or animal skins or even sea turtle shells or eggs. So remember, these animals are animals who evolved in the forest. They're not adapted to city streets, and city life is debilitating for elephants. If they're not being used for rides for tourists, they're being used to beg from tourists, and they're subjected to untold cruelty. I mean, it's pretty bad. The standards of health are low. Drugging is common. The hours of work are long. The diet is poor, and road accidents are frequent. It's illegal to have elephants walking the streets of Bangkok, and yet there are currently more than 100 elephants in the Thai capital used for begging. And at least 15 every month are injured in traffic accidents. They're hit by cars. And more often than not, they're made to walk for hours despite their injuries. The majority of these elephants are babies who have been prematurely separated from their mothers, as I said, which means they face a significantly lowered life expectancy, which probably in the end is a gift for them because this is what their lives look like for the rest of their lives for 20, 30, 40 years. Baby elephants are huge attractions for tourists. So no one you see a baby elephant in any of these circumstances that they're suffering tremendously, both physically and psychologically. Elephant calves, as I said, suckle for upwards of 3 years, and deprived of this natural sustenance, their growth becomes stunted from calcium deficiency. The treats that that tourists give them don't even come close to satisfying their nutritional needs. They're suffering from dehydration, malnutrition, and starvation. Many of them scrounge what they can find. They eat cigarette butts and plastic bags. They have injured feet because they're walking on streets with feet that are soft and not fully developed, these baby animals. Certainly the adults suffer from injured feet as well. They have skin damage. Elephant calves have delicate skin that would normally find protection from the sun or by resting against their mother's belly. But city elephants are made to walk and stand for hours in the blazing sun. They have trunk and lung damage. They're constantly inhaling the exhaust from pipes throughout the crowded streets in Thailand. They have hearing impairment because of the constant noise and city racket, which creates confusion, and they're disoriented, and it could also create deafness. Isolation, fear, stress, disorientation, as I said, lead to mental disorders, and many become disassociated. Many become enraged and unstable from this perpetual cruelty, and they randomly attack their mahouts or innocent bystanders. Maltreatment by mahouts is common and includes vicious beatings and drugging to make them easier to handle. Incidents have been reported in which elephants fled in a rampage in order to escape. During the day, elephants are tied up out of sight, frequently in garbage dumps and abandoned parking lots, often with inadequate shade, food, or water. They're not bathed regularly as elephants should be, and this often leads to skin diseases. So those are some of the problems with city elephants, those who are used for riding as attractions to get photos taken, street elephants used to beg. Then there's illegal logging. As I said, commercial logging was made illegal in 1989, and until recently, the government's response to the issue of illegal logging has been weak. And in these areas of illegal logging, elephants continue to be used. I would encourage you to do your own research. A lot of the wood that comes from illegal logging tends to be sold within Thailand itself, but certainly some can be exported as well. Teak would be one of the woods to look out for. So, of course, when you're buying wood from any store, I would really encourage you to find out the source of where that wood came from. And, you know, things continue to change. So I would encourage you to do your own research in those cases. In these areas of illegal logging, as I said, elephants are used, which I know is just unbelievable to imagine these animals just being used for to carry these heavy loads. They're pumped with amphetamines to increase their work time and suppress their appetites. They're often beaten. They're starved to demand obedience. Some illegal logging is carried out along the Thai-Burma border, where there's a long history of conflict. And in fact, elephants are allowed to cross into the border, across the border into Burma, where logging is still legal. So many elephants are crossed over into Burma. And as a result, many of them step on landmines, which were installed during past conflicts. And these elephants become crippled or they are killed by these landmines. So as you can see, there are many issues for elephants in Thailand, and these problems need to be addressed. Some work on animal welfare has been increasing in Thailand, the most significant of which was the passage of the Prevention of Animal Cruelty and Provision of Animal Welfare Act in 2014, so very recently passed by the National Legislative Assembly after years in the making. The law punishes those people who neglect or torture animals or fail to properly care for them or who transport animals in unsuitable vehicles that lead to death or injuries. Now, a lot of this has to do with dogs and cats, not necessarily elephants. And there's a lot of work to be done. But it's a hopeful sign. There's even now an anti-cruelty act for animals. It's a very hopeful sign, and it's thanks to all of the compassionate people who work on behalf of animals in Thailand, including Roger Lowinen, who is a longtime activist in Thailand. He has a paper on the FAO's website, and I was talking about the FAO's report on elephants in Thailand. He has a report in which he talks about some of the solutions to the problems, which I think is really encouraging. I appreciate so much that his feeling is that though there's a lot of work to be done and there are a lot of changes to be made, there are a lot of problems that we're facing, all hope is not lost. And I encourage you to read his article I included on my website as well. And if you're interested in getting involved, you can reach out to the activists and organizations working on behalf of animals in Thailand. I realize there's issues everywhere all around the world, and some of us just have different things we're interested in getting involved in. So if you are interested, there are people on the ground working on behalf of elephants and other animals. And of course, we had the opportunity to visit some of them while we were there. I mentioned that we were at the Gibbons Sanctuary. I think I talk about them again, but again, that's the Gibbon Project.org, and I really encourage you to check them out. We also had the opportunity to visit elephant sanctuaries. Now, as I was preparing for my Animal Sanctuaries Around the World TV show that I still want to produce, I did a ton of research on animal sanctuaries around the world, including those in Thailand. And of course, as we were preparing our trip to Thailand, we did even more research. So whether you're planning a trip to Thailand or you know friends or family who are, I really encourage you to do your due diligence before visiting or supporting an organization that calls themselves a sanctuary, because there are some who go by that name, but who are indeed not sanctuaries. They're not refuges for elephants or the other animals we talked about. Before I provide you with those I would recommend, I've already done the work for you for a few. I want to give you some guidelines for how you can determine if a sanctuary is ethical or if it's just calling itself that, but still exploiting animals and just trying to make a buck off of them. So ways to know it's not a sanctuary. If in any way it appears that the place exists for tourists rather than for elephants, that's a red flag. Read reviews on websites, on blogs, on trusted blogs, and on TripAdvisor as well. There's also a website called Responsible Traveler, I think it is, Responsible Tourist. There are many places online you can find what people's experiences were, and you can use them to help gauge your opinion. If they use bull hooks or goads, they may not make these weapons apparent to you, like they may not be in view, but they may be hiding them. They may say that they don't use them. They may say, we just hold it, you know, as a precaution so that nobody gets hurt. Even if they tell you that they only use them as a reminder of what could happen, but never would, that's not a sanctuary. In my opinion, having bull hooks is not a sanctuary. If there's any kind of forced breeding, rather than letting the elephants themselves choose their mates and have their own babies, that's a problem. If there's riding, of course, that's not a sanctuary. If babies are advertised as a must-see attraction to cuddle with and get photos taken with them, that indicates there is forced breeding, because, you know, because babies are come at a premium. And they know tourists will pay a lot to see babies. So if they're force breeding them to get babies for this attraction, that's a problem. If the elephants are tied up at all, that's not a sanctuary. It's not an ethical sanctuary. If the elephants are kept in any kind of forced, you know, kind of enclosure, that's not to say that there aren't like places where they might be confined because they're going through some kind of treatment or there's a night enclosure for them. That's different than like, oh, here's a fenced area of this elephant and but they don't get to interact and walk the grounds freely. That's a problem. If the mahouts make the elephants do any kind of trick for the visitors at all, that's a problem. And if the mahouts, of course, use nails or small hooks, which they hide in their hands to control the elephants, I mean, just these are things to look out for. So be wary of places calling themselves an elephant park or orphanage or refuge or sanctuary unless you know for sure they're ethical. This goes for any sanctuary, of course. Now, I'm encouraged by the number of signs I saw for elephant parks that advertised no riding, and that is definitely fantastic. But just keep your eyes open and just trust people you trust and check out blogs so that you can get a sense for yourself of what's really going on. Do your research and take a listen to what I have to say about some of the awesome sanctuaries that I trust based on my research and based on my experience and my relationship with them over the years. There are some really, really fantastic organizations there. But before I move on, I want to just take a moment to send a quick note to all of you listening and all of you supporting. Your support really does make this podcast possible. It takes hours to do the research and the confirmation of research and checking my facts and writing out the episode and recording the episode and editing the episode and hosting the episode and engineering it, etc. So thank you to everyone who listens and to everyone who supports this work at $5 or $10 or $30. We have $100 a month and $200 a month levels, and I'm so grateful for that. Support has decreased, and credit cards are declining, which is really frustrating. I know it happens because people put their credit cards up. It happens to me on sites, and you just trust that they're being charged every month. But honestly, I would really encourage all of you to just kind of do a little spring cleaning or fall cleaning or winter cleaning or whenever you're listening to this, summer cleaning, to go to patreon.com and just check to make sure that your credit card is still intact. I'd be most grateful. Many cards decline. Then, of course, it costs me money to have us go and write to you and ask you to go check Patreon. All of that is administrative costs that could be reduced. I want to use your support to actually pay for the research and the work that I'm doing rather than write to you to ask you to go check your card. So I'd be so grateful if you could do that. But in the meantime, thank you to everyone who's supporting, all of you at every level, including our newest Platinum supporter, Rachel Henry, along with our other Platinum supporters, Morgan Hall, David Cabrera, Alexander Gray, Michal Stone, Tim Anderson, Sylvie Raquel, and Ulrich. And remember, I said in the beginning, supporters at $10 a month and above receive written transcripts to every Food for Thought episode and every Animology episode as well. So if you're getting anything out of either episode or my work in general, please consider becoming a supporter today. You can visit patreon.com/ColleenPatrickGaudreau or just ColleenPatrickGaudreau.com and click on the donate button. And while you're there, check out our events. We've got some events coming up where I'm speaking. And of course, we've got the CPG trips, which you can also find at cpgtrips.com. So I'm going to start with an organization called Boon Lot Sanctuary, BLESS for short. I'm going to refer to it as BLESS, B-L-E-S, Boon Lot Elephant Sanctuary, founded in 2006 by Catherine Connor. Now, I've been following them and supporting them for over 6 years, and I really wanted to visit while we were there, but it didn't work out. I've been so inspired by Catherine's work and her story. As soon as I heard it, I was inspired, as you will be, and I continue to be inspired and amazed by her work. I really, really hope to get there someday, but I do support them even though I haven't visited them, and I really encourage you to visit www.blessele.org, B-L-E-S-E-L-E.org, and I'm going to have the link on my website and read the full story of Catherine's first journey to Thailand, which led her to found BLESS. In short, I will just tell you this. It started with a baby elephant she named Boon Lot. I'm going to try and tell you the story without crying. It's such a sweet, sad, beautiful story. Boon Lot, which is the name of the sanctuary, means survivor in Thai, and he was born several months premature. So he had to be transported with his mother, Pang Tong, to the elephant hospital in northern Thailand, where Catherine was a volunteer. She recognized very quickly that the fragile 3-month-old calf was very special and they formed an immediate bond. When Boonlot was 6 months old, his owner decided to sell him to a tourist establishment and return his mother, Pang Tong, to illegal logging. And so knowing that he had this really precarious start in life and he had calcium deficiencies because of it, Catherine knew that Boonlot would die if taken from his mother. So she launched an international Save Baby Babar fundraising campaign, that's what she called it, and successfully raised the money needed to rescue Boonlot. She was just a tourist. She was just a volunteer. She's British. She just came to Thailand as a traveler and a volunteer, but she was not, you know, this was just someone who saw and bonded with an animal. And she negotiated an agreement with the owner to allow Pang Tong to remain with her baby until he was naturally weaned. Shortly after this victory, Boonlot suffered a fall that left his hind legs paralyzed. And I don't even know how she did this, but experts traveled across Thailand to give their opinions, unanimously agreeing that he was going to die within a few days. Catherine was devastated, and yet she was determined to get Boonlot back on his feet. And she began searching for a cure. Her own funds were exhausted by now. She raised money for a hydrotherapy pool to be built at the hospital. And after an exhaustive internet search, she discovered an equine sling, which was imported from the United States and modified to fit Boonlot, and literally was with him day and night. He had acupuncture, electrotherapy, traditional Thai massage, everything to just heal this little elephant. And on his second birthday, he was presented with the world's first elephant wheelchair. It was designed by Catherine and engineers at Chiang Mai University, and it was funded by another campaign she launched in her local hometown newspaper. The chair was a huge success, and Boonlot was again standing as he walked, and it was incredibly encouraging. But despite this, Boonlot fell again and snapped his femur in half, and he never stood again. And on June 26, 2004, with Catherine holding him, Boonlot died. And in honor of his strength and courage, Catherine established Blessed Boonlot Elephant Sanctuary in his memory in 2006. Despite cautions regarding her safety and warnings about the futility of a British woman founding an elephant sanctuary in a foreign country and without government support, she did this. And they're flourishing and thriving because of supporters all around the world. Now, the reason we weren't able to visit is because the elephants come first here at Bless, and they don't allow day visits. It's a small sanctuary, and they're working hard to buy more forest land for the elephants. But more than that, they intentionally keep the visiting group small. You can most certainly visit the sanctuary. You can visit the sanctuary in northern Thailand, and I encourage you to do so. But in order to do so, you have to stay overnight, which is, you know, there are worse things in the world. You have to stay overnight in one of the three guest houses that sleep two people each. They book 6 months to a year in advance, so I would encourage you to plan ahead accordingly. And every experience I've read or heard about people having is very positive, extremely special. Just go look at their videos on YouTube. I include one on my website. Whether or not you can visit, I really encourage you to make a donation to their incredible work, whatever you can contribute. They're not only rescuing individual elephants to give them a home for life, they're also dedicated to increasing forest space, to release them into a safe wild space. So visit blessele.org and support their work. Go look at what they're doing. I'm just in awe. The next elephant sanctuary to talk about is Elephant Nature Park, also in northern Thailand, close to Chiang Mai, under the auspices of the Save Elephant Foundation, both organizations of which were co-founded by the amazing and deeply compassionate Sang Duen Lek Chilert. Lek is what she goes by. She's a native Thai who was born in a small hill tribe village just 2 hours north of Chiang Mai in, as I said, northern Thailand. She's loved animals her whole life. She's been helping them since she was a child. She has such a huge heart. She is such a beautiful person. She has a grand vision. And as with Bless, there are rescued dogs and cats and other animals at Elephant Nature Park, which was co-founded, as I said, by Lek in 1996. She is just an amazing powerhouse of an advocate. Lek founded the Save Elephant Foundation and a dedicated team works by her side to protect the Asian elephant. It's bigger than just the sanctuary. They work to have the sanctuary, obviously, and they actually run a few sanctuaries through reforestation and planting trees. They work to stop illegal logging. They help provide sustainable alternatives for local villages so they don't have to rely on elephants. And they educate the public in Thailand and internationally about the plight of the elephant. Community outreach is a big part of what they do. Her work has been recognized all around the world. She was invited by then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton to come to Washington to be honored in 2010 as one of the 6 women heroes of global conservation. She was named as Time Magazine's Heroes for Asia for her work in conservation in 2005. And she's been the subject of many documentaries, including a National Geographic documentary called Vanishing Giants, highlighting her work to protect the Asian elephant. There is a really good hour-long documentary about Lek and the Elephant Nature Park called The Elephant Whisperer, and I encourage everyone to watch it. There's a link on my website at ColleenPatrickGaudreau.com. The page for today's episode is going to have a lot of these resources, and I encourage you to watch this documentary about this inspiring woman. There's a robust visitor program and volunteer program, both of which are featured on their website, ElephantNaturePark.org, and I know many people who have visited there and enjoyed their time there immensely. Elephant Nature Park will pick you up from any Chiang Mai hotel or guest house, and you can visit for a single day, you can stay overnight, or you can volunteer for a week. So go to elephantnaturepark.org to see their other projects. I wrote elephantsanctuary.org. I'm not sure. Go to elephantnaturepark.org. But they also have a project coming up in Cambodia. They're working with the Cambodia Wildlife Sanctuary to protect and conserve 1 million acres of jungle habitat, approximately an hour north of Angkor Wat. So there's just a lot of really wonderful work they're doing, and I really encourage you to check them out. But moving to the south of Thailand, to Phuket, this is the third elephant sanctuary I want to mention, and the one we visited while we were there. We had the place to ourselves while we were there for our group of about 25 in all, and they were established in collaboration with the Save Elephant Foundation, and so they're associated with the Elephant Nature Park in Chiang Mai. And they're basically a retirement home for sick, injured, and old elephants who have worked an exhausting life in the logging and tourism industries. Even though it's affiliated with the Elephant Nature Park, its founder is a Thai gentleman named Montri Tatain. He was born in a rural village in Phuket. He was educated in Bangkok. He studied sales and marketing, and he worked in Bangkok until the economy collapsed in 1999, returning to Phuket in 2002 to work alongside his uncle as a presenter for snake shows. After the tsunami in 2004, tourism in Phuket was terribly affected. So Montri relocated to Cambodia, and he worked for another snake show. And he decided to leave the show when the owner decided he was going to start killing the snakes for soup for tourists. And so he went back to Phuket in 2006. In 2010, he bought his first elephant for a new camp in the Phuket region, and eventually wound up owning 4 elephants in total. And one of them died, which was devastating for Montri. This is what's so important to remember, is that, you know, not everyone you see who owns an elephant is some, you know, awful, evil person. These are people who are trying to make a living in an industry that has grown because of us, because of Western tourists. So these are people who also have hearts and who care about their animals, and he did. And when another one of his elephants started suffering from a leg injury, he stopped working her and gave her veterinary care for a year while they tried to heal her leg. And it was clear that her leg wasn't going to heal, so he decided to sell her. But this time, he wanted to make sure that his elephant went to a sanctuary, to make sure that this elephant went to a sanctuary. So he connected with Lek from the Elephant Nature Park, and they took Tubtim, was the name of the elephant, and of course now Tubtim was safe and settled in. However, Munch, we started talking with Lek about having a sanctuary in Phuket, which there wasn't any at all before Montre founded the Phuket Elephant Sanctuary in 2016. So the construction was finishing up and there's still more to come, building ponds and shelters and such for the elephants. But in 2017, which is when I'm recording this and when we were there, they just finished up. And there are six elephants. There were six elephants when we were there. And we were so grateful to be able to spend several hours there. As I said, we were the only group there. We were able to do that because, again, a CPG trip. That's one of the advantages, is we can do that. And it's also because the sanctuary offers a half-day visits to the park, but it was lovely to just be the only group there. And we got to know some of the residents and spent a lot of time there, all of whom are female, all of whom are recovering from the trauma from so many neglectful, abusive, and exhausting years. And then we also enjoyed a delicious vegan buffet. In fact, all three of these sanctuaries I mentioned, they're all vegetarian. Phuket Elephant Sanctuary made ours vegan. I imagine when it's not vegan, there's probably eggs in the pad thai or something, but we've actually talked to them about that. But they made vegan for us, of course. And I know Boon Lot and Elephant Nature Park are also vegetarian. And I want to make it really clear that the money you pay as a visitor to any of these sanctuaries goes directly to the work they do on behalf of elephants. So they do charge to visit the sanctuary, and they should, because the money goes to support their work. Because we took our group to Phuket Elephant Sanctuary on our CPG trip, $3,000 was donated to Phuket Elephant Sanctuary. So whatever you pay to visit goes directly to supporting their life-saving work. You can also volunteer at Phuket Elephant Sanctuary. And in fact, one of our travelers, once our CPG trip was over, one of our awesome travelers, Jennifer, stayed an extra week longer just to volunteer at Phuket Elephant Sanctuary for a week. So, and I've just been thrilled looking at her videos and her photos and her diary of the day of just supporting these elephants and this wonderful work. It's a magical place full of hope and healing. And I feel all sanctuaries are places of hope and healing. I've said so often that we have so much to learn from the animals, and forgiveness is one of the things they have to teach us. And watching animals who've known only hardship and cruelty or apathy from humans, watching them come to a sanctuary and be given the opportunity to heal and just be, is such a gift for the animals who experience this, and also a gift for the humans who witness it and make it possible. The animals have so much to teach us if we would only take the time to learn. And healing and forgiveness is what we saw the day we visited the sanctuary. It was a very special day indeed, meeting the six residents, including Jan Zhao, one of the newest arrivals, rescued only a couple months before we got there. She's terribly, terribly broken. She was used for logging for years, and then she was sold to a writing camp. She's 38 years old and has known only hardship and toil. When she was rescued and brought to Phuket Elephant Sanctuary, she had many deep infected wounds on her body, indicative of the terrible beatings she endured. A body totally broken, a spirit broken. She has very short eyelashes because they were cut off by a former owner to make jewelry to sell to tourists. Eyelashes help to keep out the dust. There's a reason we all have eyelashes, as you can imagine. So Jan Zhao suffers eye infections, which their vet, of course, treats regularly. And Louise Rogerson, who's wonderful, and she's the program director there at Phuket Elephant Sanctuary, she told us that when Jan Zhao first arrived, they took her to the pond where new rescues usually go straight in to wade and to bathe. But Jan Zhao just stood there at the water's edge, just splashing and not really feeling safe enough to go in. And so over time, with patience and compassion, her caregivers have been slowly encouraging her to bathe and to go into the pond and feel safe and confident. And while we were there, we watched as Jan Zhao slowly went into the pond and then deeper in and then halfway through and then all the way for the very first time. And the photos and videos I have on my website for today's episode shows her in the pond and just emerging after she had gone across for the first time. It was a very, very special moment to witness, and it gives me so much hope for Jan Zhao and for all the broken bodies and spirits who are healing because of the safe place they're in now, thanks to sanctuaries like Phuket Elephant Sanctuary. And I highly encourage you to visit their website, phuketelephantsanctuary.org, and to follow them on Instagram. There are so many heartwarming stories and photos and videos, and you can even hashtag John Zhao Elephant, Janjao, J-A-N-J-A-O, elephant, that's her hashtag, to follow her story in particular, or any of the elephants at Phuket Elephant Sanctuary. They each have their own hashtag, which is pretty awesome. And I just wanted to mention one more place just close to Bangkok. We weren't able to go to the Elephant Refuge and Education Center, which is part of Wildlife Friends Foundation in Thailand. They're located about 160 kilometers southwest of Bangkok, and they were founded in 2001. They provide full-time care for almost 1,000 wild animals. They've rescued over 5,000 wild animals since its inception 14 years ago, and they have two wildlife rescue centers, one in Thailand and one in Laos, and they take direct care of the wildlife, and they also run other projects and wildlife protection campaigns. So visit their website in support of their work, and you can also visit them while you're in the Bangkok area. It's the Elephant Refuge and Education Center, as part of Wildlife Friends Foundation in Thailand. And I'll put their name and link to their website on my website. And finally, in addition to the Gibbon Rehabilitation Project and Phuket Elephant Sanctuary, we also visited Soi Dogs while we were there. Soi Dogs, you may have heard of S-O-I. Soi means street or side street or alley in Thai. Soi Dogs is a pretty remarkable organization that is making huge strides in Thailand around the street dog issue. Estimates of the number of stray dogs in Bangkok range from 100,000 to 300,000. And you see dogs running around the streets everywhere. The same 2014 Prevention of Animal Cruelty and Provision of Animal Welfare Act I mentioned earlier is also making a difference in the lives of street dogs. So that's encouraging, because now that there are laws to be able to point to that can be enforced and people can be prosecuted if they break them, that's so key. It is so important that it's there. And there's, of course, more work to do, but Soi Dogs is one of the organizations leading the way. You can visit soidog.org, S-O-I-D-O-G.org, to learn more about their work, which includes rescuing and treating street dogs and cats. There were some cats there. You will see photos mostly of me with the cats, not only because they're cats, but because there were people, volunteers, walking the dogs, but there wasn't like one place to go in and interact with the dogs other than petting and just talking to the dogs as they passed us by with their walkers. But the cats who were rescued were in their own little rooms, and yeah, it was kind of heaven. It was kind of heaven to go into like a room full of like 15 cats, and they were all just lounging and happy and affectionate. I think a lot of the cats were affectionate because they've been on the street and they're just used to people, you know, interacting with them. So they were just the most confident, and they were just really friendly. I was surprised, as since they had been street cats and, you know, came from some pretty horrific circumstances. So they do have cats as well, but their focus is on dogs. They round up dogs every single day, and they sterilize and vaccinate them. They treat them when they're injured. They are working to end the dog meat trade. They're educating the public. They're doing community outreach, and they're adopting out many of the dogs they rescue to homes around the world. So you can volunteer to be a flight volunteer to help dogs get to their new homes. It is super easy. They make it really easy. All they need is someone to be the person to say, yes, I'm responsible for the dog we're transporting to Germany. If you live in Germany and you've just been visiting Thailand, or if you live in the US, or if you live in England, wherever people have already said they're adopting that dog, they just need people to get the dogs to their new home. So they make it really easy for you to do so. And that's one of the ways you can help. Even if you're just visiting Thailand, you can find out in advance if they need a flight volunteer. So before you leave for Thailand, just reach out to Soi Dog, ask if they need a flight volunteer, and see if you're able to help. You can go to their website, of course, and make a donation. And when you're in Phuket, I do recommend getting a tour. You can see the really fantastic work they're doing, and you can interact with the cats if you want to. And I recommend volunteering. You can do so for a short period of time. One thing that was really lovely, in like all the places we went, including the Gibbon Rehabilitation Project and Soi Dog, is that there were people there who were volunteers who had come back. They either prolonged their stay in Thailand or decided to not go lay on a beach somewhere and go back to volunteer at the sanctuary, or they left Thailand and then came back to Thailand to just volunteer at these organizations. That says a lot about the work that's being done at these organizations. So I'd heard about Soy Dog in the past. We had some friends who had adopted a dog from Soy Dog like 8 years ago, but I was doubly impressed, triply impressed, having been there in person and seeing the work they're doing. So that's Soy Dog. And as sad as it was to see and hear about the plight of elephants, of gibbons, of monkeys, of street dogs and street cats, of tigers and so many animals in Thailand, I still have hope. And it lies in all of us. I don't believe all of the people paying for elephant rides and shows are bad people or who revel in animal cruelty. As clear as it may be to you to see the cruelty behind elephant performances or rides, it's just not that clear to everyone else. Just as the animal exploitation industries in the US and elsewhere in the world work really hard to hide the violence behind their cruel products and performances, so too is the case here. That's what happens everywhere. Education is so key, and each one of us can do so much. Each one of us can do our part to speak up against animal performances when we hear of friends or family going to any of them anywhere, including if they're visiting Thailand. I want to make sure that everyone understands these are not unique. Animal performances specifically are not unique to Thailand, but of course, what I talked about, the elephants, that's certainly unique. So encouraging people to not go get elephant rides. We can use our social media accounts for education. I made a graphic you can find on my website, again, on today's page for today's episode that says say no to elephant rides. So you can download it and share it on your own blog, share it on social media, share it more than once. We have to do this again and again and again. There are so many memes out there, so many different graphics I know we can share because there's so many animal issues around the world, but doing it once is great. Doing it several times is going to have more of an impact. You can share this podcast episode with family and friends, at least share the page because there has lots of specific resources. You can speak up when you hear about someone visiting Thailand, whether or not they say explicitly that they're going to go on the elephant rides. They may not be thinking about going on any of these elephant rides until they get there. So if you just know someone's going to Thailand, talk to them and tell them in advance that you might want to warn them about some of the things they might want to avoid. And of course, if we want to experience being with elephants, we can visit ethical sanctuaries like the ones I mentioned. They're providing a new paradigm for elephants who are domesticated and can never be released back into the wild. Every penny that goes into these sanctuaries instead of elephant rides and performances means protection for them and helps the mission of these organizations, which also includes getting more land for these elephants to truly be in their true forest homes. Paying to visit these sanctuaries isn't unlike the model of visiting the mountain gorillas I mentioned in my Rwanda episode. It's about the animals, and the money pays for their care and conservation for the long term. I wish humans always did the right thing for its own sake, for the sake of doing the right thing, and that governments would stop being accessories to animal abuse. And I wish governments would allot funds to just support these animals and these forests and these habitats. I just wish that were the case. But like I said about the mountain gorillas in that episode, it's not going to happen. I mean, at least right now, it's not happening. And providing a new type of tourism, if you want to call it that, I mean, it is this ethical tourism based on animal connection rather than animal exploitation is a hopeful model for the future. We see it succeeding in Rwanda and Uganda and other places in Africa. We see that happening. You know, it's the difference between whale hunting and going on a boat ride to see whales. I mean, right, that's what ethical tourism is. And of course, they have to be kept in check. And of course, we have to make sure it's being done ethically. And that's what we can do. But at least we can have this future for the animals, for the individuals who are broken, who are suffering, who need sanctuary. We have the power to remove the harmful tourist exploits that paradoxically take place because of our desire to be close to animals. And I get it. I get the desire to want to be around animals. I want to be around animals all the time. That's why I've surrounded myself with animals. But my desire to interact with them doesn't come before their right to live in their homes that they evolved in and to live a life free of cruelty and exploitation and harm. And I'll be honest, even sanctuaries in the long term aren't the solution to the problems we're creating for animals around the world. They're only the band-aid to save a limited number of individuals until we can solve the core problems. Sanctuaries are a consequence of cruelty, not the solution to the underlying problems. And one of the problems we can solve in Thailand is taking profit out of the animal shows and performances and rides, creating anti-cruelty laws for all animals, designating elephants as endangered, protecting wild elephants from being poached or sold to be used in trekking or logging, and protecting the forests. And though some of the work needs to be done by advocates on the ground living in Thailand, and it is being done, we, the tourists visiting Thailand, are the ones with the power to stop putting money into the pockets of those who profit off of animal exploitation and abuse. So remember, when traveling to Thailand, we can all be responsible, ethical travelers. And I have all of these bullet points on my website: not riding elephants, not paying to have your photo taken, all of these on my website, so that you can just send the link to friends and family who don't know any better. With a little education and a huge dose of compassion, we can go a long way in making travel choices that don't hurt animals. And we even may save some along the way. I say that because, in addition to the organizations we supported while we were there, and the animals we helped because of our visits and donations, one of our awesome travelers, so one of them stayed in Phuket to volunteer at the elephant sanctuary for a week. Another, Laura, took back to the United States the best gift possible, a kitten who made his way into her room in our hotel in Phuket. Laura and this little kitty bonded immediately. She named him Surin for the beach we were on. And sadly, she missed coming to the elephant sanctuary with us because she brought Surin to the vet to start getting his shots and vaccinations so she could bring him back with her to Seattle, to his forever home. He needed to get a series of shots and remain in Thailand a little longer before he was allowed to fly back to the U.S., and so she found a safe place to board him. This was all through the help of our CPG Trips guides. They send Laura photos, the place that's boarding him, and videos of Surin while he awaits her return. So Laura is flying back to Phuket from Seattle to pick up her new kitty to give him a safe, loving home in Seattle. That's just another happy story among the many sad ones, and a testament to the lives that can be saved and the hearts that can be expanded when you travel mindfully, ethically, and compassionately for the animals. This is Colleen Patrick-Gaudreau. Thanks for listening.